We have a reading called Brothers and Sisters by Reverend Christopher Boyce. Where is the toilet paper? This is what my friend used to holler at the top of his lungs from inside the bathroom when he was a child. The reason was that his sister used to hide the toilet paper. This was her idea of humor. She did have compassion. After my friend had begged for a reasonable length of time, she would slide the toilet paper under the bathroom door, one square at a time. St. John once gave some difficult advice about sisters and brothers. Those who say, "I love God," and hate a brother or sister are dishonest. For those who do not love a brother or sister whom they have seen cannot love God who may have not been seen. Religious liberals have a different idea about God. However, most of us would agree that God would never stoop so low as to hide the toilet paper from us. For this reason, an unseen God might seem infinitely more lovable than a sister or brother who we have seen. Loving our brothers and sisters is not always easy, and yet, if St. John is to be believed, it is an essential part of a good life. I don't believe in the doctrine of original sin, but I do believe in the original sibling rivalry, the story of Cain and Abel being an example. Yet I don't need a biblical text to prove my point. My experience as the youngest of five children has more than confirmed my belief. Still, underneath the storms and struggles of sibling rivalry, there are often deep feelings of tenderness. Through discord, conflict, and reconciliation, I discovered that the divine and the human are intimately intertwined. I have come to understand the words by the anonymous poet. I sought God, but God I could not see. I sought my soul, but my soul eluded me. I sought my brother and sister and found all three.
Our wayside pulpit has these words this morning. At the end of the day, do others feel loved in your presence? Is that, as the author Mazen Kipp asserts, the spiritual bottom line, something we should all be aspiring to? And if our role is to make others feel loved, then when do we get to feel loved? Universalism can be described as a religion of love. But what kind of love are we talking about? Our choir sang eloquently this morning about love. And I found one definition that works for me in most contexts related to spirituality. It's put forward by Scott Peck in his classic book, The Road Less Traveled. And I've used it here before. Writing about love, Scott had this to say. Discipline. Discipline, it has been suggested, is the means of human spiritual evolution. But what lies back of discipline? This exercise of the free will. What provides the motive, the energy for the discipline? Scott wrote that this force is the force of love. I'm very conscious of the fact that in attempting to examine love, we're beginning to toy with mystery. In a very real sense, we'll be attempting to examine the unexaminable and to know the unknowable. He goes on, love is too large, too deep ever to be truly understood or measured or limited within the framework of words. I begin with the certain knowledge that the attempt will be in some ways inadequate. The results of the mysterious nature of love is that no one has ever, to my knowledge, arrived at a truly satisfactory definition of love. And in an effort to explain it, therefore, love has been divided into various categories: eros, philia, agape, perfect love, and so on. I'm presuming, however, here to give a single definition of love, again with the awareness that it's likely to be in some ways inadequate. I define love thus. Love is the will to extend oneself for the purpose of nurturing one's own or another's spiritual growth. And here ends the quote. This definition of love, spending oneself for one's own or another's spiritual growth, includes the option of solitary spiritual growth, the development in the way of the mystic or the aesthete. You can achieve spiritual growth in isolation, in places of sanctuary, removed from the stress of interpersonal relationships. But is it not our expectation that a person having achieved such spiritual enlightenment would still be someone in whose presence we would feel loved? If the path of spiritual enlightenment led to a place of indifference to others, or worse yet, to dislike of others, that would indicate to me that we were on the wrong path. The indifferent, or worse yet, the grumpy, nasty, unpleasant monk would not be my role model. According to Peck, love is the power behind our discipline, behind our human will, when we exercise that will for spiritual growth. And spiritual growth is all about connections. And now that could be connections with nature, could be connections with our own emotions, could be connections with music, or connections with science at a deep level. But the most challenging spiritual growth will always involve our connection with other human beings. And I believe that is what we're about here at the Universalist Unitarian Church of Halifax. The beloved UU minister, Richard S. Gilbert, seemed to agree with Peck when he wrote the following. He defined love. Love is the struggling to care when we are feeling unsure. It is trying to be patient when we're in a hurry. It's coping with loss when we ourselves are lonely. It's forgiving when we would make judgments. It's learning to let go when we would hold on tightly. It's walking that extra mile when our legs are weary. It's talking when we would choose to be alone. It's nourishing others when we need to be cared for. It's encouraging when there is little hope. It's consoling when defeat holds us in its grip. And it's cheering our heart, and it's cheering when our heart is heavy within us. Making love in body, spirit, and soul is the work of a lifetime. The joy of existence, the pain of parting. Making love is not what we do, but what we are. What is love then? What we do, or what we are? Or is it both? Here ends the quote. Alan's reading before this sermon spoke of love between brother and sister. That's the model of love that is often used in religious communities, something religious communities seek, brotherly love. The closeness of family, but a family of choice, a family with boundaries, a family based on healthy relationships. Not always the case in our families of origin. When Janet and I joined a UU congregation for the first time, we were living a long ways from our family of origin. We were seeking role models for our children who were not yet born. We were looking for people, for aunts and uncles, like those that we had grown up with. And it was only last night, as I was working on this sermon, that I realized that aunts and uncles for our children must be our brothers and sisters. I was seeking brothers and sisters in spirit for myself as much as I was seeking aunts and uncles for my children. What does it mean to feel love in another's presence? It means that you feel that the other is genuinely interested in you and that the other is listening carefully to you with compassion and with tenderness. It means that you feel that the other would be willing to extend themselves for your benefit, for your spiritual growth. When someone is able to unburden themselves and to a sympathetic listener, the experience can be powerful and spiritual for both the person listening and the person speaking. At any given time, we all have different capacities to love, But with discipline and the exercise of our willpower, we can grow this capacity, even the capacity to love the unlovable. Dostoevsky wrote in The Brothers Karamazov, "Love people even in their sin, for that is the semblance of divine love. It's the highest love on earth. Love all of God's creation, the whole and every grain of sand of it. Love every leaf, every ray of God's light. Love the animals, love the plants, love everything. If you love everything, you will perceive the divine mystery in things. And once you perceive it, you will begin to comprehend it better every day. And you will come at last to love the whole world with an all-embracing love." That is quite a challenge, I admit. The sermon I promised for today was also to deal with the question, if the bottom line is, do others feel loved in my presence, what about me? When do I get to feel loved? My first answer to that question is to be alert and grateful for the many ways people reach out to help you now. This week, by serendipity, I read a Facebook posting by Tanya Billsbury, our director of religious exploration. And she gave me permission to quote it here to you. Tanya wrote, without any prompting, "It overwhelms me with gratitude to realize that I am surrounded by people who support me, coach me, mentor me, advise me, include me, listen to me, give me feedback, connect me with opportunities, and or provide me with the things that I need. It may only be a small amount from each person, but the aggregate is overwhelming. The support system is one of the most precious things that I have. And investing back into that is pure pleasure. Forget fight or flight. Instead, tend and befriend. It's so much better." Thank you, Tanya. It's been said 10,000 times by different sages, perhaps never as clearly as by Mahatma Gandhi, as said the following in one sentence: "The best way to find yourself is to lose yourself in the service of others. When others respond to you in love, you establish a loving relationship that feeds your need to feel loved. Love is never a one-way street. It's not something to be soaked up and passively enjoyed. It starts with your will to extend yourself." So in conclusion, at the end of the day, do others feel loved in your presence? Or considering the congregation as a whole, at the end of the day, do people feel loved in our presence? Not just those who have been members here for years, but the new person who walks in the door today or tomorrow. Do they feel loved in our presence? A powerful question to assess our individual spiritual health and the spiritual health of this congregation. It's a worthy goal to build a community where everyone feels loved in our presence. May it be so. Amen.